They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shot You? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today, ladies and gentlemen, we got the goddamn band back together again. You feel me? That's what's up. To my right. Hold on a second. You're to my right. She is to my left.
Your other right.
Yes, my other right. I'm figuring it all out here, people. I'm figuring it all out. Film critic, host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast. Girl, welcome back. It is Sometimes It Snows in April. April Wolf. April, hi.
Insert old Rose Titanic gif.
It's been 84 years.
quick rundown. I've been gone for a while. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff happened. Cat died.
Oh.
Saw some of the best beautiful natural canyons in the world. Spent the night in a haunted marionette theater to shoot a feminist ghost hunting pilot. Village Voice closed down. That was a fun one to find out. there's a lot of stuff happening. But, you know, it's all good. The one thing I think is like...
How I Spent My Summer by April 1.
I know. The one thing I think is like the really, really fun thing that I get to mention, also to shout out our producer, Casey, is that I got to see the premiere of his new web series, Lucy Follows Her Dream.
Oh, yes. Ooh. Yes. And congratulations.
It was such a fine relief for me that I didn't have to lie to him that I liked it. It was like, oh, I like this. Thank God. You guys know your friends. You're just like, oh, God, I hope that this is good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That first meeting, whenever like the lights come up and that first face-to-face you have, you're always like, oh, man, I hope this is going to be okay.
Because, you know, my eyes tell everything. I'm a very honest person, very honest. So congratulations, Casey O'Brien.
That's what's
and,
up.
And, you know, Lucy Follows Her Dreams. It's really lovely.
Where can people see Lucy Follows Her Dreams at?
I don't know. I think it's going to be on YouTube.
All right.
I had to go to Culver City to see it. So hopefully people don't all have to go to Culver City
see
it.
Okay. I have to take that trip every day.
Okay.
Every day. Well, welcome back, April. I'm sorry about your cat, yo. Damn.
Well, you know, R.I.P. 18 years with her.
Oh, okay.
Love her forever.
There you go.
Friends got me a pillow of her. So like a life-size pillow. I hold it every night.
Oh, wow.
I am that tender. So, yeah.
Well, that's what's up. Welcome back. It's good to have you here. My man, to my right, here he is. El Mero Mero de Navidad, film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonso Duralde.
Hello.
Sir, what is good with you?
I guess autumn. It's not happening here, but it's good somewhere. Someone is enjoying autumn.
You can feel it. You can feel a little bit of a breeze.
Someone is having an unironic pumpkin spice latte. I still have rashes in my armpits. So,
right there with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, summer. Summer in Los Angeles. It lasts till like November.
I mean, you're literally wearing shorts right now. Both of you are wearing shorts. I'm wearing jeans.
It's warm outside.
I'm wearing beach weather.
Baby, it's warm outside.
It's warm outside.
Oh.
How was your first pumpkin spice latte?
I have not had one. I tend to skip pumpkin and go straight to dark chocolate peppermint. So, you know,
my man.
I'm just sort of circling the runway right now.
He's so smart.
That's what's up. I fuck with peppermint mocha lattes.
Hells
yeah. Year round, yo.
What's good, Ricky?
Oh, damn it. I was waiting. I was like looking at him.
this week, my what's good is more of a what the fuck did I just watch? I finished Twin Peaks.
Whoa.
What the fuck did I just watch?
Oh, the return, the TV series? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I mean, like, it's... I loved what I saw when I, when I understood what was going on. Like, I loved it. And that's including shit like that episode 8 where I'm like,
oh,
I
mean,
yeah.
Beautiful to look at.
Serenity for the victims of Hiroshima.
And then there was a lot of, like... I mean, how long am I going to watch this dude like sweeping the floor right now? You know, how long am I going to watch?
Three more minutes.
I love that that they give you that bit at the end that you thought you were watching for the whole time.
Yes,
which is that like Cooper gets his memory back and he comes back to the police station. We get about 30 seconds of that, and then it's back to like crazy town.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
No resolution.
Yeah,
that moment of him looking at the camera and saying, "I am the FBI," mm-hmm. And like the fucking music going. I mean, I almost got like emotional during that because at that point, like, I had already, like, told myself, like, there's a good chance he is not coming back on this show. We're 16 episodes in. But lo and behold, my man shows up, yo. And that's what's up. That's...
I suspect if you look online, you might find some fan theories about what it all meant and what happened.
Oh, I mean, if you can't, I mean, I knew exactly what all that meant. As soon as the credits rolled, I was like, I got it. Thank you, David Lynch. So long, sir.
Moving on to Better Call Saul.
Yeah. Moving on right now. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about peppermint. We're going to play some messages from our Who Shot line. And as always, we will have our staff picks for you. But let's start off with our new segment called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I will read a news blurb. Actually, we're all going to read a news blurb, segments, headlines, the whole daily. And we're going to answer these two simple questions. Is this important? Do I care? I'll read this first one because it's from my home city, y'all. I love everything that Jordan Peele is doing right now. I mean, I've loved it since Key and Peele, but like,
oh, sure, yeah.
Like every announcement that comes out for what he might be doing next,
new
I'm
Twilight
like,
Twilight Zone,
the Twilight Zone,
Nazi Hunters,
the Nazi Hunters thing, and now they're talking about according to BloodyDisgusting.com, he's going to be remaking the 1992 Chicago classic, my city, Candyman, y'all. Sidebar, first celebrity I ever saw when I moved to Los Angeles, Tony Todd in my neighborhood pavilions.
He's hard to miss.
Yes, exactly.
He's also one of my first settings when I first...
Is that right?
Yeah, when I first moved back. When I moved back to L.A., for sure. Yeah,
I was like, oh, hell yeah, Candyman is buying cheese. That's what's up. he is in talks to... Jordan Peele is in talks to be bringing Candyman back as a remake. We don't know if he's going to direct it or not. 2 years ago, the original director, Bernard Rose, said he'd be interested in doing a proper sequel to the movie with the original star, Virginia Madsen. Right now, Jordan Peele is working on his follow-up to Get Out, so we're just going to have to wait and see when the new Candyman comes out. Is this important to y'all? Do you care?
I've never seen Candyman.
Ooh.
It's so good.
I'm a big chicken when it comes to horror. I think we've established on this
show.
Yeah.
Yes, so we have.
I haven't even seen Candyman 2, which Bill Condon directed.
Did he really?
Yeah, that was
wow.
Like that was his sort of like first. He had written a bunch of cool cult films like Strange Invaders and Strange Behavior. Directed that one. It did not take off quite the way they wanted to, but then Gods and Monsters was sort of his big breakthrough. But yeah, he directed Candyman too.
Wow. Yeah, they usually let people direct kind of like shitty sequels of horror films to really kind of like get their feet wet, and sure. Then they let them go. It's kind of a thing. It's a great movie. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's creepy as fuck.
I love Candyman. There's definitely some problems the contemporary race stuff could be fixed or expounded upon for sure. But yeah.
I haven't seen it. I don't think I've seen it. Like since I rented it, like on VHS, after seeing it in the theater,
watch it again. Let me
tell me
what you think.
I kind of remember like sort of like the history and the lore behind like the Candyman, like
yeah,
in
Cabrini
the movie.
Green and the,
yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like there's like a. I wonder if it's a commentary as much still as much, or if it's just kind of like this is weird that. What's that?
Or just exploitation?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. I did get to do an Outfest Q&A with Virginia Madsen this summer. That was
sweet.
Nice.
Hell yeah!
All Candyman themed, I'm sure.
Oh, who wants to be the brave soul to take on this next story here?
I'll do it.
Oh, April, coming in hot.
Okay, so last week we learned that director Shane Black knowingly cast a registered sex offender friend of his to star in the new film The Predator. After finding out, Olivia Munn reported it to the studio 20th Century Fox, who then deleted the scene from the film, and rightly deleted it. Mm. This week we learned of the repercussions that she has experienced for speaking out. Let's take a listen to a few clips from her interview on Ellen.
You were in this movie, The Predator, mm-hmm. and you found out that the director hired his friend to play a guy that was hitting on you, mm-hmm. who actually turned out to be a registered sex offender for a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And so you spoke out about it.
Well, first of all, when I did call my co-stars, I got chastised the next day by people at the studio for telling them and why am I not just, you know... you know, just keeping it quiet. It's all going to be okay. It got deleted. What's the big deal? And I said, well, I mean, it happened. My cast members, nobody said anything to me about it. Nobody talked to me. Nobody reached out. And that whole day. And then at first I thought maybe it's because they just don't know what to say. They want to stay out of the way. But privately, I did feel iced out. And I think that's what's really important for people to understand is, you know, when you see something, you have to say something. However, it's not going to be easy. And there will be people that just get mad at you for not playing the game.
So Munn has said that she has not heard from director Shane Black still. In the interview, she also goes on to say that co-star Sterling Brown did eventually reach out to her via Twitter. So is this important? Do you care?
Oh, God. I wish this was not even a story, but it is so a story. Because I, you know, I'm a fan of Shane Black. He, you know, he puts a lot of Christmas in those movies. But holy crap, this is just so gross on so many levels. And it's like...
This guy was also in The Nice Guys, too.
Yes, which starred...
Scenes not deleted.
Which starred a minor
14-year-old
actress.
Girl, yeah.
So it's like, okay... If you want to help your friend who's a registered sex offender and probably finding it hard to find work, surely there is some place you can get him a paying gig that is not in a film working with actors that don't know who this person is and what his history is.
Workplace safety issue.
Exactly.
First and foremost, do not put your cast and crew in harm's way.
Yeah. Right. You know, it's like, or either like... Give him some money or, like, hire him to work at your house. Let him, like, you know, answer your emails or something. But, like, this is just all. And then the fact that Olivia Munn goes forward with this and nobody has her back, seemingly. And it's just sort of this thing where it's almost like people are treating it like it's this. It's tacky of her to have spoken out or improper somehow and trying to then make her the bad guy. Just this is so distasteful on every level.
You know why
some of the cast has like come out, though, since then and been like, yo, we have your back. I'm on the side of like the actors who are like, yeah, maybe I don't want to like talk about this right now. And like, that's such like a hard conversation to have because the way news travels so quickly and just she's feeling like she's iced out when in actuality some cast members like, you know, it takes a second to like process all this and like wrap my brain around it.
Well,
and because
but she also
people are
about,
so quick to judge. I'm just talking about the cast. I'm not talking about
she talked about how like the other actors like very overtly gave him a standing O at the Toronto midnight screening when nobody else in the audience was standing. It wasn't like there was a standing ovation, but that literally these three actors got up and applauded for Shane Black. And it was almost kind of like showing that they were on his
side
because, you know, he can hire them again in the future and she can't.
Well, it's
one
of those things.
Who did like from the main cast?
Yeah,
is that right?
I think it was like Boyd Holbrook, Keegan-Michael Key, and Trevante Rhodes, unfortunately. Yeah.
See, that's one of the...
I know!
Trevante Rhodes said that he wasn't disappointed in Shane Black at all. And that's one of... I think that... So, two things. When you have a cast of a ton of men and only one woman, you know what happens? That one woman is going to get ostracized as opposed to two women who get to talk to.
There is actually a second woman, but they don't have a scene together. Like, the movie
exactly.
goes out of its way to not be Bechdel-friendly.
Like she, and in fact, I don't think that they were even on set the same days.
Oh,
like,
crazy.
It was just... It was one of those things where, like, if this is a woman who feels alone, and every office, everything that you ever workplace that you see, everyone knows you need to have at least two women because at least then they both feel comfortable saying what they need to say.
Mm-hmm.
And other people also don't ice both of them out. And it's another thing of like, you know, you're saying that it takes a little time for people to come around. I think what happens though is women tend to be very set in their moral code when it comes to these things. Like we've already thought about them so much and what happens in those situations and how you react that there's a split second of just like Olivia Munn knows what's wrong and what's right. And because this is something that has, you know, her compass has been set. She knows exactly what her response to this would be. And I don't know that a lot of men have had to think about this.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
And so I can understand to a point, you know, that there's a second, but it is, you know, it is just a matter of like another kind of like emotional labor of like women are the ones who have had to think about this for so long.
Sure.
And, you know, and maybe it's a learning experience. Dear God, let it be a learning experience.
I hope so. It's just one of like, more and more I find myself erring on the side of going along with people who are like, I am not having this conversation on social media. Like, that's just not, this isn't where I'm going to talk about this. I will have a conversation with Olivia Munn when I'm ready to have a conversation with Olivia Munn.
Hopefully they actually do have a conversation
with
her.
Yeah, totally. Because she seems
pretty alone and scared.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's one thing like, okay, I'm not going to jump onto Twitter and get into all this. Because actually, Sterling K. Brown attempted to do that, and even his tweets were parsed by people saying that it wasn't enough.
Yeah, exactly. So then, like, yeah, don't do that. Right. Call privately, and then Olivia Munn can be like, hey.
But, you know, like, there always have been professionals to do this sort of thing, you know? And so when the rap or Variety or whoever does a story about this and they reach out to the reps for these actors, the reps need to have something ready to go. The reps need to write something that is proper and correct and addresses the situation rather than just not have a comment.
Yeah, because this shit is not going to stop. There are going to be a lot of things like this that just continue happening.
You can't say no comment?
And I think in a situation like this, no comment implies basically that you're siding with the person who's at fault, I think. Don't you think?
No, I mean, not if Olivia Munn is my girl and I don't want to talk to whoever the rep is, or I don't, like, I want zero to do with you, just like you said, because Sterling K. Brown tries to tweet some shit and everybody immediately is like, well, what about this, though? Well, what about that, though?
I'm saying, Sterling K. Brown, you know, speaking from his heart and getting it wrong or getting it right or whatever on Twitter is one thing. Mm-hmm. The reason that, if you're an actor, the reason that you are paying to have a publicist is to craft right language for situations like this one. And when you remain silent in situations like this, then there is the whiff of complicity.
Yeah. There's diplomatic ways to do this that a PR professional can
parse.
Like, I support Olivia Munn.
Yeah.
I think the movie that we made is great.
Yeah.
I regret that this is marring it. You know, like that. That's a three sentences.
Bam,
there
bam,
you
bam.
Fucking
totally.
Go. You
yeah,
know.
Yeah. No. I agree with you. I agree with you all on that. You're right. Alonzo, you want to holler at this next one?
So last week we lost Burt Reynolds, the age of 82.
R.I.P.
And shortly thereafter, the internet experienced a similar tragedy that was also upsetting. In the wake of his passing, Facebook auto-removed the picture of Reynolds from his 1972 Cosmopolitan magazine spread because it went against their, quote, community standards on nudity or sexual activity, unquote. Thankfully, Facebook has made things right and released an apology. We are restoring the image as it does not break our standards and apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused. For those of you who have never seen it, the picture features a nearly nude Burt Reynolds lying on a bearskin rug. Is this important? Do you care?
That's the famous picture, right?
Yes.
The famous, like, Burt Reynolds picture?
The iconic photo.
Isn't it like Costanza? Like kind of like do like a parody of it?
Yes.
What is wrong with...
Kramer does.
No, I think it's Costanza.
Was it Costanza?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, this is an iconic photograph that has turned up in all sorts of places in the ensuing years. And for Facebook to suddenly get prudish about it, it's like, really?
Facebook, yo.
It's not like you can see his junk or anything.
It's weird. It's the least of their problems.
Well, sure.
Yeah, totally.
It's just, let's pile on to Facebook. They're getting it all wrong.
Oh.
But no, that is literally an iconic photograph.
Yeah.
I mean, that believe me, gay men of my age know it by heart.
I think it's a lovely, attractive photo because you can tell he has a sense of humor.
Yes.
He's also just like a masculine dude.
Yeah, no, I think he really kind of created or helped to sort of bring about a new wave of masculinity that was both self-aware and sort of reveling in it.
Yeah.
You know, like he had that thing of simultaneously like finding it ridiculous that he was a sex symbol and at the same time totally being a sex symbol.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I loved him so much in Smokey and the Bandit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found out he turned down Han Solo.
He turned down a lot
of hilarious.
It's for the best. For him, I think.
Hey, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be talking about that new Jennifer Garner joint, Peppermint. Yo, you're listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hello, listeners of Maximum Fun. I want to tell you about our newest podcast that tells you all about the truth of the flat Earth.
Have you been looking out over the horizon and you've been thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't look round. I've been lied to my whole life.
What is NASA doing with $52 million
a day? Come on. We explode the myths.
Just kidding. We're Oh No Ross and Carrie, and we investigate extraordinary claims.
That's right. We investigate extraordinary claims firsthand. We go undercover in fringe groups. We get alternative medicine treatments. And we hang out with people who have unusual beliefs, like flat earthers, 9/11 truthers.
We do ghost investigations. We've joined Scientology, and we got baptized in the Mormon church.
If it goes bump in the night, then so do we.
Hmm.
Why don't you check out Oh No Ross and Carrie at MaximumFun.org?
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today, we are talking about Peppermint, y'all. April. April, since you're back, you have the honor of please providing us with a synopsis for this film.
Okay. Well, it starts out with Jennifer Garner playing a mom who works at a bank, and she's got a husband and a little girl, and then the girl orders 2 scoops of peppermint ice cream because she's a fucking monster. Who gets 2 scoops of peppermint? Okay. The dad is going to possibly get involved in some kind of robbery, but he calls that off. Doesn't matter because he gets gunned down by MS-13 fucking... Is it 13?
In the movie, they don't say it, but yeah, MS-13.
Because they've got MS on their face, so yeah. I'm
they
assuming.
They got the face tattoo.
They have brown, on their skin.
They got brown on their skin, and they got MS on their face.
I'm not supposed to like these people.
No, they're bad. They're bad.
Oh, no.
They're praying to a scythe-holding Mary, I think. So fucking weird. Then they get gunned down. The husband, the daughter die. Jennifer Garner is just like, I'm out for justice. She knows exactly who killed her people. And yet everyone's crooked. And so these guys just don't go to jail. So she disappears for 5 years, resurfaces in Los Angeles. And then all these gang dudes who killed her family start to die in these horrific ways. Come to find out, Jennifer Garner has been training in Muay Thai boxing and collecting firearms from robberies. And she is just a transformed woman. Scorched earth. She's going to kill all of these bad MS-13 people.
And brown people.
She's going to kill all these brown people.
All the brown people.
She's a soccer mom who just got fed up.
Oh.
And so, yeah. And then she's also got like a friend who she terrorizes for some reason. Like a frenemy that she terrorizes. Anyway. Oh, God. This movie is so many levels of bad. So yeah, then all social media on this. Everyone's just. It's the same thing that happened with the Bruce Willis version of
Death Wish. Yeah,
it's the same kind of updated thing. Where like social media is siding with the vigilante and saying that she's the hero, and you know all these videos are released, and it's so dumb.
It's very dumb. It's very dumb. A word gets tossed around now a lot with movies or even like online. People like will just consider something like tone deaf, and this movie just feels so damn like tone deaf.
Well, it's from the director of Taken, and let's not forget that for as much as we like Liam Neeson kicking all the ass in Taken and being all tough on the phone, that movie is crazily Islamophobic. Like the whole movie is about like, oh no, we must save the young white virgins from falling prey to the evil Middle Eastern dusky people. And this movie, yeah, it's like the insane level of like face tatted, bandana wearing, puffy flannel shirt, you know.
It's a Virgin Mary with a scythe that they have in there. I was like, what?
And you can tell they're trying to hedge their bets from being like super 100% racist by having all the good cops be black or Latino.
Yeah, all the good cops. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by having some of the evil people who Jennifer Garner has to get vengeance on be white, like the judge and the district attorney, like the powerful people. But pretty much this is kill the brown people because they killed my family. And, you know, yeah, there's so much dumb here. Like, I like how they're trying to find her in Skid Row, and then they realize that, maybe she lives in the van that's across the street from the giant mural of Jennifer Garner with wings, angel wings made of guns.
Who the fuck painted that? Who had the fucking time?
I mean, the poster makes it look like she's taking, like, some Instagram pose, like on one of those, like, shops on Melrose. So right away, I was like, man, I don't know about this movie. I see the trailer, and already my... Man, she is fighting and shooting at a lot of brown people in this motherfucker. And then the movie starts, and the first 7 minutes, it's just like her and like with her family. And just
peppermint
with other
fucking ice cream.
Goddamn peppermint ice cream.
The movie is set at Christmas.
It is.
And that's why there's peppermint
ice
cream. I
know, that's the only thing that I thought. I was just like, Alonzo's going to like that.
Nah, it did not help.
Well, I'm actually getting my order wrong. The movie starts off with her beating the shit out of this Mexican
dude inside the car.
Some motherfucker. Yeah. Blows his head off. And then we see her interact in her safe white world where everything is just like beautiful and lily white.
And Girl Scout cookies.
And Girl Scout cookies. And she I mean, right there, I knew. I was like, don't fuck with this lady.
Yeah.
She is going to do some horrible shit.
Yeah, because rich lady, who she later terrorizes, pulls a total Big Little Lies move.
Yes.
And, like, has an opposing party so that nobody comes to her daughter's birthday, yeah. which is why they go to the carnival, which is why they get killed. I've been making this joke around, but, like, the movie that they should have made here is Batman Begins. Like, the 5 years that she's in Asia learning how to shoot guns right? and do Muay Thai, that's the movie I want to see. I want to see Jennifer Garner, like, you know, go through the Kill Bill training session. I don't care about her, like, killing half of Los Angeles to seek vengeance.
That's like the J-Lo movie Enough.
Yes.
Which I like.
More Krav Maga classes,
please.
Yeah,
I had a fun time with J-Lo's. Enough. That's a fun movie.
I haven't seen Enough. That's considered a revenge movie as well?
I mean, like, she's like...
She Krav Maga's the shit out of her husband, as I recall.
Yeah, okay. I think right. so.
She's like, she's sleeping with the enemy, and then she's Krav Maga-ing, and then look out enemy.
All right. I feel bad for Jennifer Garner in this movie. Jennifer, if you're a friend of the show, hey, I love you, girl. You're dope.
But you could tell it. She's a mom in real life, so maybe she was like, okay... This movie about a mother.
Yeah, like it's.
No, go ahead. No, I was saying, she's done some great moms. Like, she was a terrific in Love, Simon this mm-hmm. year. And she's done some great ass kicking. You know, she was Alias all those years. And, you know, not her fault that the two Elektra movies that she was in were dumb. But, like.
Did they do two of those?
Well, she was in the Daredevil movie, okay, and then there was the Elektra spinoff. You know, so it's like this should be her wheelhouse, like momming and, you know, like head kicking. But it's just a dumb movie.
Yeah. And does it change? Does it become a better movie if it's not a racist movie? Like, if John Wick is just him whooping people's asses.
Right.
But it's not just like, you know.
But it had a sense of humor. This is like.
It does have that.
This is just mean. And it's
when
also.
When it tries to be funny. I'm sorry.
No, go.
No, when it tries to be funny, it's that weird scene where she shows up to her frenemy. And is like, I'm going to burn the house down. And I was like, yes, she is. This motherfucker's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But then she's like, ah, kidding. Ah, JK, JK.
That's exactly like, what I was thinking of. I was just like, Ricky's going to say this. Like, it's...
And I was like, what the fuck is going like, on right
Yeah,
now?
You're the bad guy. Like, yeah. What are you doing? Like, why would... Like, you're just a lunatic.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have any fun watching that. Although, like, the movie was just so dumb that there were some parts where I laughed out loud because I was just like,
yes.
Like, where mm-hmm. the detective, like, just gives her a photo soaked in her family's blood. And, like, yes. The second that she wakes up, they're like, I thought you'd like to have this. They're like, why would she want to have this?
Maybe you could wipe the viscera off first.
Like, her husband's brains are on this. What are you
just
doing?
Scrape some of that off for you right there.
So unprofessional. I was just like, for real? Like that? Okay.
And the whole thing, like she's in a hospital recovering from this whole thing, but it's like, yeah, we really need you to come down and ID these people or we're going to have to let them go in 12 hours. Yeah, like, I don't think that's how any of this works.
That's how the law works. That was legalese right there.
Look, Pierre Morel, for all of his weaknesses as a director and... blindness to racism, knows how to make a decent cartoony action sequence. And so there are some moments, you know, the big shootout in the pinata factory, I'm not kidding, actually kind of effective. And, you know, there's some cool shooting and car chasing and whatever stuff. But it's at the service of this plot that makes no sense. You're right. She is the bad guy, but the movie relentlessly treats her like the hero. And she doesn't get to be an anti-hero in the way that like Liam Neeson is in Taken because you miss this vital 5-year chunk in which she turns into this like crazed killing machine where she had before been like the mommy, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing to endear us to her and to make any of things that she does okay. But I would disagree on the pinata factory shootout. I thought it was like I was like, this is very lazy and staid action.
Hmm.
It was just something that I was like, oh, and then she's going to do this. And then she's going to, yeah, obviously, this is what's going to happen. It's just, it wasn't inventive in the same way that I feel, you know, we're talking about John Wick and then, you know, this kind of artful violence.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
There's something to the choreography of camera and movement that this one, I think, just it wasn't quite there for me.
Yeah, as much as like we can tell, like a bad like horror movie just like relies on like jump scares. I think this one just relied on gunshots to the head. Like, that was, like, their big, like, oh, man. Like, every move was, like, a gunshot to the head. Mm. Like, she kicks a dude away, shoots him in the head, and then moves on. And I would say there's probably a fuck ton of gunshots to the head in John Wick, mm-hmm. but there is just...
They're mixed in with other things.
Yeah, it just felt so much more involved.
The fluidity of the movement of the choreography in John Wick is just, it's very different. It's close contact combat, and this is kind of further away, just kind of sniper a lot of the time, or, you know, like a safe distance away, which, I mean, probably slightly more realistic of your, you know, like you don't usually do close contact, but it's not as... interesting on film.
Not that realism is anywhere near what this movie even cares about.
No.
Like, there's one part where three of the shooters from the car are found hanging by their shoelaces off the Ferris wheel. And you're just thinking, how did Jennifer Garner drag those guys up there? Or did she tie them all while it was on the ground and then turn the Ferris wheel on for
how did they not
turn,
fall out of their shoes?
Got those two little kids to help her out do that.
Because she's a good mom.
She got the whole Girl Scout troop. Got the merit badge for it.
Definitely, like, written by someone who's never been to Skid Row, too. Skid Row is an actual community. You know, people do live on the streets, but it's an actual community. And, like, late at night, there are people who walk around and they're, like, you know, playing cards and, you know, shooting the shit. Like, it's fairly vibrant, mm-hmm. even, like, through the night. So the idea that it's just kind of like a dark, like, 1980s version street of, like, Los Angeles is just very doesn't, like, none of it sits easy with me.
Yeah.
There's just no recognition. I was thinking that this was written by someone who hates L.A.,
Oh, wow.
Like, I was watching it like, feel like you hate L.A.
Were there any like, action set pieces that you did enjoy? I mean, Alonzo, like, the pinata sequence, was there anything kind of that was like, all right, that was
I love it
okay.
when the guy gets shot slow motion and uses his daughter as a shield. Because he does that.
April,
if you guys see this movie, watch the slow motion.
That's
like,
her husband. That's you're not supposed to love that moment. It's supposed to be horrible.
He's just like, I don't know why he turns and puts his child in front of him and then falls back, but, like, he's really using her as a shield.
Not the daddy of the year, that one.
No.
Not the daddy of the year.
If you want to entertain yourself during this film, and you'll need to, there are a lot of scenes when Jennifer Garner is, like, punching or shooting somebody, and it's fun to throw in your own moments where she would yell, "What's in your wallet?"
That'd be amazing. Do either of you have favorite revenge movies? Or ones that you would recommend to people besides this hot mess?
Oh, I mean, yeah, there's a whole thriving genre of them.
Yeah, I usually keep a list, and for right now, I can't remember fucking any of them.
My go-to is usually Ms. 45.
Mm. What's Ms. 45? This is part of the reason I ask, because I'm like, I know I'm going to hear some shit.
This is an Abel Ferrara movie, which I have not watched in a while. I don't know how it stacks up in the Me Too era, but it is about a mute woman who... works in some kind of fashion job and, like, is sort of mildly harassed in the office and then sexually assaulted on the street and then basically, like, gets a gun and starts, you know, like, becomes a vigilante.
Mm.
And she just there's a whole sequence where she goes to a costume party and so she's dressed as a nun but with, like, really bright red lips and she's shooting all these people and it's, like, a really kind of vivid visual.
Holy shit. That sounds pretty badass.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
But it's been a while since I've seen it.
Ms. 45. April, were you able to think of anything?
Oh, I mean, just recent ones, Revenge and Prevenge.
Ooh, Revenge for sure. Yeah.
What's Revenge? I don't know that one.
Revenge is the rape revenge movie from the French director, Coralie Fargeat.
Oh, with the girl. You told me. I believe you talked about this on the show.
On the show, we did.
Hypercolored desert.
Oh,
fucking
so
fever
good.
Dream. I love it. It's hilarious at times, randomly, and then also very deeply felt. And just cool. First, like, rape revenge. Jesus Christ. Prevenge.
There's different kind of revenge movies, right? There's the rape revenge.
Yeah, and then Prevenge is Alice Lowe getting revenge for the accidental death of her husband. And she goes insane. She's like a pregnant woman whose baby is telling her to kill and get revenge.
What?
And it's a horror comedy that is, and it has a callback actually to the movie that you talked about too, at a costume party scene where she comes dressed as a kind of nun skeleton.
Interesting.
And she comes there ready to kill, but then goes into labor instead.
Oh, oh wow.
It's a fascinating film.
I can't wait. I can't wait till that new John Wick comes out.
He's riding a horse, I think.
I was about to say, I just saw that picture where he's like riding a horse and like shooting at some dude. And I'm like, my man, John Wick, yo. I'm still a fan of the Kill Bill movies.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Would Old Boy be considered a revenge movie?
Oh, totally.
Old Boy. Definitely.
Love Old Boy.
The Korean one, not the Spike Lee remake.
Wait, there's a Korean one?
We all had a good laugh.
A movie that apparently every film student watches now, because there was a when I was teaching grad students, there was an assignment that involved people kind of putting together their manifesto of things they didn't want to do as filmmakers, and I saw the damn hallway scene from Old Boy so many times. That's like everyone's touchstone.
I thought Spike did a good job of recreating that in the movie, or like doing his like twist on it, where
sure.
like, it's like one shot going up three floors. I've been trying to like look at my phone.
I've never seen either of the I Spit on Your Graves, but
I'm not familiar with them.
I know they have checkered reputation.
I mean, it's still interesting for me to watch the first one. I'm fascinated by rape revenge as a genre.
Why is that?
I think I've always kind of liked it because of the second and third acts. Because the second and third act is essentially where a woman just murders men.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
It's agency, Ricky.
Yeah, you know, it's a sense of justice in a very unjust world, and so yeah, it's one of the very few times where you get to see women doing action as well. Hmm. Not as much now. But for a very long time. Same thing with, you know, most horror films is the first place that you can find a female lead in a movie.
Mm. Yeah. I was like, before I went to go see this movie, I knew like, oh man, it's not getting good reviews. It's not happening, but I'm sure it'll be fine. And then the first review I saw, Jennifer Garner stars in an ignorant, racist drug tirade. And then it just goes into ellipses after that. And I was like, oh my goodness. But then there was a story from a website that I like going to, The Mezcla.
Oh, yeah. My friend Carlos wrote something for that.
You know, yeah. They're doing a great thing where they now, if a movie comes out that has a Latino presence to it, they will go find see what Latino film critics are saying about that movie. And every single Latino film critic was just completely just kind of going back and saying what we were saying. One journalist said the filmmakers unwittingly tap into the current administration's anti-Latino hysteria, giving Peppermint a relevance it doesn't deserve. I just don't understand. Like,
you don't think it's purposeful? I feel like it. I feel like this is purposeful. I feel like this is not.
I
think that people have agendas, and I think this is an agenda.
Think this director had this agenda?
I don't think people sometimes understand that they do, but I think that people do have agendas.
Yeah, I think they want to eat their cake and have it, too. I think they want to, like, shoot for a mainstream white audience and touch on their fear of brown people, but at the same time then give you John Ortiz as the nice LAPD guy or mm-hmm. the black actress who plays the FBI agent to be like, what? No, look, they're heroes. They're our heroes, and they're people of color.
Yeah, I was like, man, I so wanted to digitally remove John Ortiz from this movie. Like, let's get you out of here, bro. Let's get you out of here. I want to get out of here. Does anybody else have anything they want to say about this?
I'm so done
about this film.
Although I think one of my favorite things is that my husband, like whenever he hears like or sees the trailer, he's just like, Peppermint. So when I was just like, I have to go see a movie, and he like turned around from his workstation and was like, Peppermint. And I was like, that's like the only way that I can think about this movie. It's just...
In Dallas, there was a legendary TV kid show host named Mr. Peppermint, who I think of every time I see this title, and he would not have liked this movie.
So I think we're all going to be agreeing here. But what do we think? What are we telling the people? Should they screen it, stream it, or skip it?
Skip it like a flat rock.
Mine is just like a gif of laughing into oblivion.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say skip the hell out of this movie, y'all. It is just it is not good, not enjoyable at all. John Ortiz, I wish better things for you always, bro. Better things for you always.
Cash that check and keep moving.
And keep on keeping on. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to hear from you on the Who Shot line. You're listening to Who Shot Ya right now.
Podcasts.
Podcasts.
Podcasts. They're audio programs that
tell smart stories
in innovative ways
using editing techniques like this.
But let's face it, all that smart stuff can be exhausting.
That's where Stop Podcasting Yourself comes in.
It's so stupid.
It's just two stupid dinguses
being dumb idiot jerks for 90 minutes.
Stop Podcasting Yourself,
the stupid show that smart people love.
Find it on iTunes
or MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Last week, y'all, we introduced a new segment called the Who Shot Line. Universally acclaimed, yo. Universally acclaimed. I posed a question to all of you and asked you to call in with your answers. The question was, which actress who has never done an action film deserves to be an action star? Once again, y'all did not disappoint, and we cannot wait to play all of your calls, but we're not going to do that. We're not going to play all of them because we got too many. We will do this again. So let's just roll those clips, yo.
Hi, Ricky and everybody. I have to apologize if I am stealing this from April, but we need Angela Bassett to front a action movie, and no, Critters 4 doesn't count. We need to see her kicking some major booty. Angela Bassett, please. Thank you.
Where's that Stranger Things sequel? Or no, that's right, Strange Days.
Strange Days sequel.
I was just going to say Strange Days because she's like her running in heels.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'd be all for that.
Yeah.
And more of her in the next Mission Impossible movie as well.
Let her kick someone's ass.
That's right. Totally. In a bathroom. Kick Tom Cruise's ass in a bathroom.
Yes.
Hi, this is Miranda Prince. Obviously, Betty White. I mean, is there any other answer? She would be so great as a sweet-looking ass-kicker. I would absolutely watch that movie. Okay, love you guys. Bye.
Did she say Betty White?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she did. I was just like...
Her co-star on The Golden Girls starred in Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. So
they could totally do
a sequel there. I think.
I want to see a Golden Girls Fox Force 5 top type ass whooping.
Do we count Lake Placid? Her movie Lake Placid.
Oh,
in
right.
that? I feel like I can't. I don't think she didn't. I think she just held a gun, but I don't know.
Yeah,
if
she feeds things to the alligators.
Yeah.
Lake Placid is supposed to be great.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, that's what the people who talk about it, who like that movie, they love that movie.
My friend Bibbs, I think, has actually done a ranking of all of them because there's been all these direct-to-video sequels.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that. Holy shit.
Hi, this is Rolf from San Marcos, Texas, and my vote is that Oprah needs her own action movie.
Mm.
One, just to prove that woman literally can do everything. I mean, we all know it, but just to prove it. And two, just because the jokes could write themselves. I mean, like, you get a roundhouse kick, you get a roundhouse kick, you get a roundhouse kick, and so on.
Oh,
I'm seeing Gail as the gun-toting sidekick.
Stedman is the driver.
Yeah, he's the getaway guy.
Yeah. He's just like that silent force behind the wheel, you know, like, Oprah, I'll get you to where you gotta go. Boom.
Actually, I mean, she's a fantastic actress that I think she actually could do an action film pretty well.
Ninja with an H.
I would not be surprised if like there was like a cameo of like Oprah in that new that Widows that's coming out.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
I know, that movie looks fucking dope.
I got chills when I saw the trailer today. Like literal chills.
Yeah, you did.
Because it was air conditioned in the theater.
Well, partly.
Hi, Ricky and all. This is Laura in Northern California. And I've been giving your question a lot of thought, and I realize there's really only one right answer, and that is Rita Moreno. I don't care if she's in her 80s. She can still take you down. Bye.
She could indeed.
Yeah, she
I did
could.
A Q&A with her at Outfest this summer, too, and she has got it.
Yeah.
She sweeps the leg, I'm sure.
Oh, no question.
Sweeps the leg. Like, she'll, like, yeah, she'll get you, I think.
I love this. This is giving us a good demographic of our audience so far as well, because it's like a Golden Girl, Rita Moreno.
We need to be talking more about movies starring people over 70, apparently.
I think so.
Hey, thank you to everybody who called in, y'all. We do not have a specific question for next week, but if you want to call, we're opening it up. If you want to call with any questions that you have for us, please do so. We will play them on the air in the future. Maybe you want to call. You want to ask April what she thinks of the Leprechaun movies. Not just Leprechaun in the Hood. Everybody's go-to. Everybody
fucking
wants
A+.
save it for the show.
Okay.
Save it for the show. You want to ask Alonzo a Christmas movie you should watch when you're feeling lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Call in, you know. He'll tell you.
I'll have thoughts.
You want to ask me, hey, Ricky, how much Café Abuelo should I drink before watching Cloud Atlas? Four cups at least. But please call in. The number is WSY-803-1664. WSY-803-1664. Thanks again to everybody who called. That was dope. It's almost time for us to go, but before we do, it is time for our staff picks. Every week we ask the panel to recommend a movie. It can be streaming, it can be in the theater, what have you. April, what do you have for the people?
Hey, I'm going to take a wild guess and maybe assume that no one has recommended Let the Corpses Tan while I've been away.
You are correct.
Yay! Let the Corpses Tan by Hélène Catet and Bruno Forzani, French directors who idolize Italian cinema. And this film, Let the Corpses Tan, is like an exploitation and Italian crime drama, like 70s version of that, along with some spaghetti Western tones. Oh. And also, you know, some shots that set up a little bit like Mario Bava and some of the, you know, the horror directors. They've done a bunch of movies like this that are so precise and wonderful and beautiful that it's you don't even know what you're watching sometimes, but it's just so fascinating, like the sound design, what you're seeing, that it's insane. You have to see it. Like these criminals get holed up in a mountainside, and there's an eccentric lady artist who like hates cops and society and also kind of hates the criminals, so she's just out there for herself, and there's a giant shootout that takes place like over a period of 24 hours, and it's mind-bending. You have to see Let the Corpses Tan.
Now, if I've never seen a giallo, will I know what's going on?
Even if you've never seen a giallo, you will know what's going on, because they're actually really good at trying to do spatial organization and trying to tell some kind of narrative.
Okay.
So, I mean, they kind of blast the narrative apart, but at the same time, there's a thread that keeps you going, I would say, and Let the Corpses Tan.
Who's Jello? What's going on? You guys?
Jello Biafra.
J-E-L-L-O. Jello is it's an Italian horror specific genre of like Mario Bava and Dario Argento and those guys in the 60s and 70s. And it is one of the genres about which I know very, very little. And everything I've read about this film makes it sound really cool, but I just didn't know if it was going to be packed with references I wouldn't get.
Yeah, gotcha.
It is contested whether or not Dario Argento is indeed Jello.
See, this is how little I know.
He still draws from the, you know, Italian cinematic traditions and ways of filmmaking.
Lucio Fulci,
who cuts eyeballs in all of his movies, like stabs eyeballs. He's famous for that. He's so good in all of his movies people should watch.
Okay. All right. Word. I'm going to get my learn on, yo. Alonzo, what do you got?
So, again, going back to the passing of Burt Reynolds, I wanted to give a shout-out to a film of his that I think is great and not enough people talk about, the 1979 comedy Starting Over, starring Burt and Candace Bergen and Jill Clayburgh. He plays a recent divorcee who starts dating a new woman, and it's written by James L. Brooks, actually, before he became a director himself, directed by Alan Pakula, who at that point was best known for paranoid thrillers like All the President's Men and The Parallax View, was about to direct Sophie's Choice, but here's this really charming, urbane comedy and a really great Burt Reynolds performance. I think really, you know, it's a solid leading man turn, no mustache, no, you know, like six packs or kind of good old boy stuff. He is playing a character who is smart and funny, and it's just a really terrific film that I think does not pop up enough when people talk about his filmography. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. Check out Starting Over.
Word, that's what's up. Hey, y'all, my stat pick this week is a movie that I mentioned earlier, Old Boy.
Oh, good. Are you going to grad school?
It's just, I know I asked if it's a, or earlier, if it's a revenge movie. Regardless of that, it's just one of, it's one of those movies that I went in blind, not knowing anything. And where the story goes is just fucking fantastic. It is one of the most tripped out endings you will ever see in movies. It has one of the best action sequences you will ever see in movies. I can't believe I'm saying this right now. It has my favorite dog death in a movie.
Oh,
that's a new blog right there.
Yes,
favorite
it is.
Favorite dog death.
And there are so many to choose from.
Well, yeah, just go to my page on Tumblr. You can see all about them. Next week, we'll be talking about The Predator with Oliver Wong. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. Y'all, 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. I'm going to read one right quick. Kirsten is a Nerd says, I spent the last 2 weeks listening to the entire backlog of this podcast, and I fell in love. Thank you. Y'all have some stellar opinions and the best recommendations. I'm going to get my friends hooked if it's the last thing I do. That's what's up, Kirsten.
Is
yeah.
it going to be that hard? I mean,
like, what if it is, though? Like, what if she has to do, like, a Clockwork Orange shit? But, like, just keeping our ears open?
She has to go full peppermint on them.
No, don't do peppermint. Peppermint.
Peppermint.
Peppermint.
Whatever you do, just make sure you post it on the Facebook page for us, Kirsten.
Yes,
please do
we
that.
Need to know.
It feels good to have y'all back in the building.
Reunited, and it feels so good.
And it feels
reunited,
so good.
And it feels pretty okay. We'll see
Thanks.
Next week. Gotta ease in.
It was pretty average. I was proud of us, y'all.
Not the worst.
Have a comment or suggestion about this week's show? You can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Don't forget to call the Who Shot line, WSY-803-1664. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that is what is up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.